holidays? You mean like the major holidays?
Like Easter and Christmas.
Oh, you mean Western holidays. Well, do Westerners celebrate Buddhist holidays? No, the answer is no. They don't pay attention to them all. They totally ignore them. There could be, but if it doesn't fall on a Saturday, then it's difficult. Buddhists celebrate all holidays. Christmas, Easter, Hanukkah, whatever you want. Buddhists can celebrate anything. We don't have that. The difference between other religions and Buddhism is that Buddhism, one, is not a religion. And two, you can celebrate anything you want with anyone you want if it's for the benefit and good of yourself and others. So Buddhists celebrate Christmas, for instance. But it's not celebrated the way Christians celebrate it, of course. But it's the idea of giving, you know, offering and giving, exchanging gifts and goodwill and all that. If a Buddhist marries someone who's non-Buddhist, then they generally will go to church every Sunday, or they go on Saturday or Friday or whatever they happen to their spouse's faith, you know, is engaged in. So they're very, because Buddhists look at things as beneficial or non-beneficial, not as religious, then we're very flexible.
Now I was just curious why there wasn't a Dhamma talk last week.
Well, last week I was home. I wasn't here last week. But, no, normally it wouldn't matter. Saturday is always the Dhamma talk day. And sometimes in the morning after food offering. Depends on how much time we have and who's here. Any other questions? Yeah.
As far as no self,
that's my favorite question.
Does Buddhism allow a place for individuality?
That's all it is about, individuality. Entire Buddhism is about individuality.
Would you mind elaborating?
People never understand the doctrine of anatta, no self. No self, no soul, no permanent entity. No divinely made thing. And this is the only, Buddhism is the only teaching that does that in the history of the world. Because all religions are based on soul, except for Buddhism. The Buddha said there is no such thing. He doesn't say there's no self. He says there is no permanent self. So, there's so many quotes from the Buddha saying you have to rely on yourself. Ahi atano natho, self is the refuge of self. What does he mean by that if there's no self? So even in Thailand it's a difficult, right? Atta anatta. Kajai me atta anatta man kwa maya. Ti pun. Tua eng dong bing ti pun kong tua eng, hame? So even in Thailand, it's a difficult, people don't understand that. Because they say, no self. But what the Buddha is talking about, there is no permanent self. But self is the refuge of self. Self is the one who practices. Self is the one who makes the raft for crossing over. Self is the very last thing to disappear before enlightenment. Because you have to use self. And Buddhism is totally about self. The Buddha says, within this fathom-long body, from toes to head, is the universe. The beginning of the universe and the end of the universe. This is where it is. How can you get more self than that? You are self-healing, self-curing, self-enlightening. Every other religion depends on something else. Buddhism is the only one that says, you are your maker. You are your destroyer. You make your future, you've made your past, and you're made in the present. It's all about self. But what he's saying in anatta, atta, of course, is the big Hindu word for, at the time of the Buddha, atta or atman, you know, is the soul or the special person that's divine and everlasting. And there's nothing in Buddhism that's everlasting. There's nothing that is eternal. And that was a big problem for the Brahmins at the time of the Buddha, because there's no such thing. And just as today we cling to that, that is the major reason for religions, is soul. If you don't have a soul, nobody would do anything. And not only that, it's divinely made. Well, Buddha says, no, it's not. It is you as a three-year-old and you sitting here now are not the same person. And you will not be tomorrow, and you won't be 10 years from now, and you'll just keep changing and changing and changing. That's self. And the idea that there's a soul is there's absolutely no evidence for it whatsoever. There's no evidence for anything eternal at all. And the Buddha is, maybe you could call it radical empiricism, where he says, the experience you must know for yourself, otherwise shelve it. So there's the idea, the big, another big difference in Buddhism is the idea of faith. Faith is not particularly a laudable thing in Buddhism. So self, yeah, I can see that getting very confusing, and you know, but once it's explained, then I think it makes sense. Any other questions?
Let's say tomorrow you become enlightened. Would there be any reason for you to meditate after that?
Sure.
So you continue the practice?
The Buddha, one of the things the Buddha calls it is a pleasant abiding in the here and now. So just because you become enlightened doesn't mean that you suddenly lose your mind and body, which is a burden. Mind and body is a burden. And so the most pleasant way to exist is in a state of meditation. So it's happiness that's not affected. So, yeah. You would, yeah. Who here is for a school project? Come on, you got to have questions. Because you're never going to go to a Buddhist temple the rest of your life. You might as well ask. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask the group thing. I saw the
PBS
program Wednesday?
I don't remember when it was, but it was good and really bad. There were some flaky New Age people in there, especially that poet woman and the other poet and the Jewish psychiatrist. They were really bad, totally misrepresenting Buddhism. But there were some good things in it too, yeah, so it was a typical kind of...
Did you have to watch the show after that with the young... I take that watched it. That had to do with Tibetan Buddhism.
No, I didn't watch that.
Richard Gere was that book. He narrated the first show, and the second one was about them trying to find the reincarnation of a particular person, and they go through all this process. And then they,
yeah, family. I didn't. I'm not interested in Tibetan Buddhism, so it's too strange. You had a question.
Yeah, it's hard for me to sort of formulate it, but I mean, in your opinion, what do you think is more pertinent to gaining enlightenment? Would it be sort of meditation, or would it be a realization?
good question. Very good question. I didn't like the end, but I liked the question itself. What's more pertinent to enlightenment? It isn't an either or. It is a if you start from scratch and you say, first of all, what is enlightenment? Why are people trying, right? And why do people try to become enlightened? So there's the goal and there's a reason for the goal. So why is that? Why are there religions? Let's start with it from scratch. Anybody? Except that people have heard me say this 5,000 times. We have to think about it. Why do we have religions? Stress, okay? The world sucks. That's why we have religions. The world sucks. You're born, especially when most religions popped up, you're born, you grow old, you go sick, and you drop dead. That's it. That is all you know. That you, if you, in Buddhism, you see, the cause of death is birth. We don't talk about illnesses. You die because you're born. That is the cause of death. So you look at the world and the diseases and tsunamis and earthquakes and wars and kids die and miners get killed and mines and it goes on and on and on. And everybody's sitting there, why me? Humans whine a lot. Because our lot is not very pleasant. We're not. There's racism and sexism and ageism and bigotry and bias. And you look at the history of the world, it's a series of wars and overthrows. And you look at the Bible and it's killing everybody in a flood and then flaming cities. And it's a hard life. It's a life that you're born into. And then there's all these mysteries. You know, everybody thought the earth was the center of the universe and it was made just for us. You know, we're special. And we like to think like that. Humans are very arrogant. They like to think that they're the center of the universe and special. But then why do things happen? So religions come about to explain and to cure all these problems. There wouldn't be any, if you did not die and you did not get sick, I guarantee there would be no religions. Because what are you describing? Garden of Eden. Well, that was screwed up. And we got tossed out. This is how the story goes. It depends on what religion you belong to. But it's all about the human condition is bad. It's suffering. It's stressful. It's painful. And we have to have meaning. We don't have any meaning. What's the meaning of us being here? Now, we're perfectly happy if we think about animals. They have meaning, the meaning that they were put on the earth for us to eat them, for our use, according to religions. So you have this, so you have religions arising for the same reason. They're there to answer the question of why does life suck? And they come up with the answers of things that we don't know about. Where did we come from? Was there a beginning? All of those things are answered. So in the same way, the Buddha tackled the question, he tackled the root of the question itself and said, stress. Life is stressful. Okay, we got to answer the question of why is it stressful? But he didn't come up with a God. He came up with it's stressful because it's stressful. And you're stuck in it. No amount of praying or sacrifice is going to change anything at all. And all the people praying for the miners. I remember they did this 2 years ago. Nothing. They're all dead. Their prayer doesn't make any difference. But we continue because we have stress. We have suffering. And if you don't know a way out, then what do? Sacrifice and rituals. So the Buddha says, the first noble truth in Buddhism, you guys didn't study Buddhism, right? Yeah. The first noble truth in Buddhism is stress. Here's the problem, the Buddha said. The problem is stress. All of the religions say the problem is sin. We're wrong. The Buddhism, no, you're not wrong. You simply don't understand the rules of how the universe runs. It's not intelligent. It doesn't care about it. It isn't interested in punishing us or torturing us. It's totally neutral, like gravity. So you take something and you drop it. We'll always fall. I don't care if you sacrifice goats or pray your heads off. It's always going to fall. Nothing's going to prevent it. It doesn't care. So biology doesn't care. Physics doesn't care. They're just rules. So the Buddha says, okay, the way to get out of stress is to understand the rules. The things you can't fix, you let go of. The things that you can fix, you fix. And the only way to fix things is mentally. You can't fix them physically. So whether you're a Buddha or enlightened or not enlightened or in the middle of the jungles in the Amazon and don't know society at all, you're born, you grow old, you go sick, and you die. Doesn't matter how religious you are, how unreligious you are, everybody follows the same pattern. Doesn't affect them. So the Buddha says, okay, there's stress. So what is the cause of stress? Why are we stressed out? You can only be stressed out in your mind. You can't be stressed out. It's your mind that is the problem. So the Buddha says, okay, it is because the mind craves and clings to things that are stressful. That's the problem. Is there a cure? And the Buddha says, yes, there's a cure. What is the cure? It's virtue, concentration, and wisdom. That's the answer. What do you use to get enlightened? You use virtue, concentration, and wisdom. And the self uses it. There's no praying in Buddhism. Buddhism is not a god. We don't care about gods. There's no creator. It's a blind universe that runs on rules that just don't care. And I always say, in Thailand there's a tsunami, and in Indonesia at the same time there's a tsunami, the biggest tsunami that's ever happened in recorded history. The way Indonesia looked at it, the way Thailand looked at it, was totally different. The Thais look at it as earth is doing what earth does, water does what water does, fire does what fire does, air does what air does. The Muslims were punished by God, we did something wrong. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Men, women, and babies, and kids, and animals all wiped out because they were bad. So the Buddha said, no, this is not out to get anybody. This is a giant wave because there was an earthquake, etc. So the Buddha says, know the rules. Now, in our everyday life, this is what we do. Nobody, and I guarantee it, nobody's going to sit home and pray for breakfast or pray to be driven to work or pray that somebody, the work is done, or when you get sick, pray that you get well. Nobody does that in the real world. We do things, right? We don't sit there, I've got cancer, I guess I'll just sit here and pray. Off to the doctor like that. So there's this disconnect between reality in which we live in and whatever faith we have. But in Buddhism, he gets rid of the faith and he says, okay, you've got to have reality with reality. That's what he's aiming for. That's what he's teaching. So he says, look at the rules. And the ones you can fix, fix. The ones you can't fix, let go. Let go. What do you let go of? If you look at body, you let go of body. It will grow old. It will get sick and you will drop dead. Stop clinging to it as mine. This is me. This is mine. This I am. Big mistake. Lots of stress. Lots of suffering. Yours? Okay, tell your body, get taller. Hey body, I want to be 6'2". I want this skin color. I want this color hair. I want you to pay no attention to you whatsoever. It's a biological mechanism that just goes on, thumps along, finally gets sick and drops dead. I don't care what you try to do to it. You can't bribe it. You can't pray to it. You can't sacrifice to it. You can't reason with it. Yours? This is me? But we cling to it. This is me. So then everybody else gets Botox and we paint it up and we want to look like our peers and we starve ourselves and we have bulimia and got to wear the right clothes, got to write the right haircut. We got to, this is our struggle to make a me out of something that isn't, because it's slipping through our fingers all the time. It's not me. Not only is it big suffering, but it's big misunderstanding. It causes racism. We see the outside of body, right? Color. I don't even think I'll get into body. You guys have heard it so many times. This is pretty obvious when you... So the Buddha is about mind, because it's mind that clings to things. It's mind that claims things. It's mind that's deluded. He says, look at the world and reality, how it is in and of itself, and not how we wish it were. And when we have no proof of anything, we shelve it. Simply shelve it. You don't say, I don't believe, or blah, blah, blah. You simply, I'll put this aside. I can't live my life on something that is based only on faith with absolutely no proof. No, why should I do that? We don't live our real lives like that. I have faith that my brakes will work, so I won't apply them at the stop sign. We'd say that person's mad. They're insane. Or someone that goes through real life with faith that things are going to be done without their effort. Nobody does that. Well, if they do, they're dead pretty soon. We understand gravity so we can climb ladders and climb trees. You don't climb up a building and say, I'll just jump off because I have faith that I don't believe in gravity, so I won't die. Splat. So speed, mass, time, all the physics, biology, we believe in those things and we know the rules, and you know you can't bribe them. You live your life to keep yourself from being harmed because you're smart about those things. Fire burns. Okay, I'll stay away from fire. We learn, this is what we learn from, it's empirical experience for a child to burn themselves once or twice. Uh-oh, I know what that is. Don't play with this, don't play with that. Kids will often do it anyway. We were told when I was little, don't climb on the garage roof and jump off. Of course, we did all the time. Until my brother did something bad with his ankle, jumping off. So the Buddha isn't, here it is, right here and now. There it is, pinch it, it's there. This is what you can know. It's not infinite. You know your body, you can know your body, you can know your mind, and this is investigation. In Buddhism, it's called Dhammavijaya. Investigation of phenomena, which means Buddha's basically talking about body and mind. That's what he's talking about. And he's not a god, he's not to be prayed to, and there isn't, in Buddhism, there's a saying, if you go outside, you go wrong. This is, of course, not only in Buddhism, it's all over the world and all kinds of philosophies and politics and everything else that messes people up. In other words, the Buddha says, don't be stupid. Investigate and know something before you act, otherwise, wait a minute. Remember all the wonderful things weird religions have given us, like Jim Jones, Jonestown, where all they drank the cyanide Kool-Aid. Or great Mr. Abernathy, who there was a flying saucer between Hale-Bopp Comet. Or go on and on and on about the stupidity of people. Spiritually stupid is unforgivable. Intellectually stupid is fine. There are many people living very happily in the world, in the Amazon and other places in the world, who are not civilized, they can't read or write, and they're very happy people and good people. But to be spiritually stupid is dangerous. Got one life that you know of, that's this one. Don't waste it. Don't waste it. You can know in this lifetime. You don't know what's going to happen after you're dead. Nobody does. In Buddhism, we say you're reborn, not reincarnated. You're reborn, but hey, who knows? The Buddha says, don't pay attention to next life. So you don't pay attention to tomorrow either. You pay attention to what's going on right now. So you'd have what's called mindfulness in Buddhism, which is the kingpin to understanding. Mindfulness means being aware of the present. Keeping your mind in the present. What am I doing and what is my mind doing? What am I thinking? So you're thinking about sensation, body sensations. What is the position of my body? How does my body feel? Thinking about body itself. You're thinking about the state of your mind. Is it happy? Is it sad? Is it aggressive? Is it neutral? Is it depressed? Is it anxious? Is it all those things. And then you think about, you zoom in on mind and you pick out what are the objects of mind. So, I'm angry. What am I angry at? You pick that out, you dig around and investigate it. There's so many reasons why this is not done. I don't know why this training is not done in the world. It's, I think only Buddhists do it. To simply tell someone to train their mind, to tame it. All right, the body does what it does. But for a lot of people, the mind does what it does too, and it drags us through stress. So if you're mindful, you say, oh, I have anger. Instead of focusing on the object of your anger, let's say if you're angry at someone, then the typical thing to do, it's like bullying. I was reading in the newspaper, the news about bullying. Instead of saying, "What is this to my benefit and the benefit of others, what I'm thinking, saying, and doing?" There's no mindfulness, so it's just let loose. Anger isn't looked at as a bad thing. And it's looked at as, in the West, as we're helpless. I'm angry. I'm helpless. Jeez, I'm angry. It's just an excuse. So you're angry and you see somebody that you're angry at. What we normally do is we build up the anger. We keep throwing fuel on the fire and then we get our friends and talk to them and get them to be angry too. We spread the virus. Whereas the Buddhists would say, I'm angry. Now, thoughts of anger, words of anger, and actions of anger, is that good for me and other people? No. Okay, then while I'm angry, I won't think, say, and talk. I'll investigate the anger in and of itself. What does anger feel like? It's hot, it's burning, it's unpleasant, it makes me not able to sleep and think correctly, makes me say and do things that are ugly. Why should I be angry? Why should I hold on to this? So you see it as a hot coal that you're clinging and you drop it. If you don't have mindfulness, you just go with the anger. Now you go with it, but you try to spread it around. And that's the same with all other negative emotions. So Buddhists train the mind. Stop it. Be mindful, meaning I am aware of what my mind is up to, and I'm not going to let it get away with it. Whose mind is it? Is that where the soul is? Is that where the self is? Does mind never change? Do we have free will? When someone's really angry and enraged, do they have free will? Even civil law recognizes a crime of passion as opposed to a crime that's planned, cold-blooded. Completely different judgment on those things. First degree, second degree, homicide, crimes of passion, premeditated. The civil law doesn't treat those the same. Why? Because the intention behind the act. Was the person furious and angry and out of control? No free will. No free will. If you had free will, you could just say, stop it, no anger, and it would go away. If you had free will, you could say, from this day forward, I will be happy only. Mind's not going to pay attention to you. It's going to get pissed off, it's going to get jealous, it's going to get sad, it's going to get angry. Just do it, and we're dragged around like a buffalo by a ring in its nose. What kind of you is that? So meditation is training the mind, stop, sit still, hold it. Don't move. That's the first step. The basics, the minimum of what somebody has to do with their mind if they're going to take that thing and live the rest of their life with an uncontrollable mad dog. Would you live with a mad dog in your house? Biting everybody? No, we wouldn't put up with that for an instant. But we got this mind that just runs around doing things that makes us unhappy. That makes us unhappy, it makes other people unhappy. You know, you can sit in a chair. That's what the chairs are for. You've got another half hour of this. I hate to see people uncomfortable. Buddhism isn't yoga. You know, really. That's why we have chairs. You see what I'm saying? It's straightforward and simple. You are responsible for your mind and what it does. You're responsible for your thoughts and your words and your actions. You're responsible. Can't put the blame on somebody else. If you get pissed off and punch somebody in the face and swear at them and yell, that's your fault. Oh, I was angry. We have so many excuses. I was angry. I was upset. Anger, a rule of thumb, I said Buddhism is virtue, concentration, and wisdom. That's the way to enlightenment, those three things. Three legs of a table, you take away one, it falls down. Virtue in Buddhism, so simple. If you think, say, and do something that is not to your benefit and the benefit of others, don't think it, don't say it, don't do it. If you're thinking, saying, and doing something that you say, is this to the benefit of others and myself? Yeah, okay, then do it. Go ahead. You have to go to books, look up, you know, things. Everybody's got it right here. It's just common sense. This is not good. You know that, or you don't know. If you don't know it, oh boy. Even our dog knows it. We have a stupid dog that knows it. Of course, you have to give him a cookie. Sit down, he sits down. Shake hands, he shakes hands. Lie down, he lies down. Don't eat the cat food. He won't eat the cat food, except when you're not around. Don't chew on the furniture. Don't do this. That. He knows bad and good. Still, he's a dog. A little bit sneaky. So people don't know the difference between bad and good? Hanging people, burning people, killing people, however method that's bad or good? Was there a question there? Being angry, hateful, biased, bigoted, is that good anywhere? Those aren't difficult questions. And yet we see people doing this all over the world, being just those things and thinking they're right. That's insane. Sabbe satam malang in the Pali language. Sabbe satam malang. All beings are insane. What is the cure to insanity? When you're enlightened, you're cured. Enlightenment doesn't mean, I don't know what people think enlightenment means. Enlightenment means freedom. The mind is finally freed from stress. The mind finally sees things as reality, what is real. And the mind finally abandons things that are impermanent, that are not self, and that are subject to stress. Just lets go of those things. So an enlightened mind is happy. Because it isn't. Doesn't have a sense of I am. This is. It's no longer the center of the universe. It's free. Freed from body and mind. That's what enlightenment is. Has no more greed, hatred, and delusion. It has no more... It doesn't have the things that, you know, that make us twitch and move and retaliate and... Virtue is simple. But the Buddhist viewpoint is not simple. Buddhists do not look at the world. You know, in Thai, there's no word for self, for soul. No such word. There's not even a concept. Think about it. Burma, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, there's no such word. They don't have a concept of soul. And over here, that's all the concept we have. We don't have a concept of no soul. They have a concept of self. And that self is impermanent. And I would like to show anybody here to prove to me otherwise. or any scientist or anybody else in the world. You prove to me that self is permanent. Nobody even dare try. I mean, it's just simply common sense. Experienced because we have a body. But the concept of virtue in Buddhism is so different because we don't have sin. Now, the only reason that that people are virtuous is because they don't want to offend God, so they'll go to hell for eternity, etc. And the commandments are based on that God and that persona. And we are suffering because we sinned. Well, a woman sinned. And we're all suffering because she did. Doesn't make sense, but never mind. So in order to get to where you want to go, you have to submit. And that is, you have to have faith. In Buddhism, there's no sense of faith like that. You can't sin because there's no creator God. You're in a world that is full of stress. And so there's skillful and unskillful actions. If I punch someone in the nose, there's going to be repercussions. If I go to someone and help them, there's going to be repercussions. Tit for cause and effect. The Buddha said, simply cause and effect. If you think and speak and act in skillful ways for your benefit and the benefit of others, you will be happy. That's skillful. If you let your body and mind loose on the earth, then you're going to have up and down, up and down, up and down happiness because it's hit and miss. It's like rolling dice. So the Buddha says, okay, you're mindful and you behave in a certain way because the causes, the repercussions, the fruit of that behavior is going to be happiness. And you don't behave in certain ways because you'll make yourself unhappy and other people unhappy. Just simple, visible, thinkable, experienceable, empirical doing. When, let's say you have a problem and you want to go to somebody to fix your problem, would you seek out an angry man, an angry person, a hateful person, a greedy person? Would you seek out that kind of person for advice? Would anybody? Yeah, he's greedy and hateful and angry and he's all of these. No, I wouldn't go to that person. Nobody go to that person. You seek out the opposite. You said someone who's calm, who's even-tempered, who's got equanimity, who's fair, who doesn't judge, who listens. That's what we seek out. Those are the very qualities the Buddha's talking about. Those are the cultivated. That's what we must cultivate. So in a way, it's a balancing act. It's harmony, to create harmony. So you go through life and you learn constantly because you're mindful. You pay attention. You have Dhamma Vichaya. You have investigation of phenomena. You learn from other people's actions. You learn from your own mind and body what's going on. So when you get into that mode, you don't need a teacher. You just simply need to pay attention to what you're doing. And it'll teach you. It's a skill. Shooting a gun, shooting a bow and arrow, being a surgeon. Repetitive skill. You get better and better and better at it. And you say, this nonsense isn't necessary. This is important. This is not important. The ability to take yourself through life without need to running around being confused is the whole thing of Buddhism. It is to be self-sufficient. To get to a point where you are wise enough that you could go on your own without falling back. But it takes training just like everything else. So the concept of this is evil and this is good, and this belongs to the devil, and this belongs to God, and this is not a concept of Buddhism. It is, my actions bring me happiness and others' happiness, or they don't. That's it. That's it. Now, if we don't know our own mind, speech, and body, then of course, I would advise just go through life like that, you know. It's like an icebreaker. So Buddhism is thoughtful, intelligent, investigative, careful, being very, very aware of self. Very aware of it, because that's all you got. It's all you've got. So the self as a raft is definitely the instrument that you use through life until you get enlightened. Concentration or meditation simply means training the mind to sit still. What it does in essence is you clear the mind of greed, hatred, and delusion. You clear your mind of all the baggage that you've got. You stop your mind and you just rest it there. And the longer you rest it, the stronger it gets. And then when you open it again, like you were opening an eye, you aim it at a subject that will give you wisdom. So the Buddha gives us lots of 40 subjects of meditation. Buddhists almost always use mindfulness of breathing. It's breathing in, breathing out. They concentrate on their breath. That is to get into a state of meditation. Meditation in and of itself, it's not an end in and of itself. And in fact, the teachers call it tree stump. If somebody just learns to meditate, no matter how good they get, they're a tree stump. Wisdom doesn't arise from that. It's not an end in itself, and it's not the goal. It's part of the raft for crossing over. So you get into a state where your mind is there's no longer greed, hatred, and delusion. It's an equanimity, which means it's balanced. It's not biased. It's not going one way or the other. It just sees the thing. What is this in and of itself? We place values and names on things. This doesn't value itself. It's actually pretty cheap. But it doesn't know it's cheap. So the mind then opens at a subject like impermanence or stress or mind states or mind objects or body, and it just sees it for what it is before it starts working again. Because once the mind gets out of meditation, it gets revved up and starts throwing all kinds of junk. You can see that in, as I always say, what's the most valuable thing in the world? Most valuable thing in the world, not gold, diamonds. What are they? You guys know what diamonds are, right? You in high school or university? University, right? Okay, what are diamonds made of?
Charcoal.
Well, carbon, yeah. That's right, charcoal is carbon. Compressed carbon, where does it come from? Dead things. Dead, long dead dinosaurs, long dead trees, long dead biological objects. Compressed carbon becomes a diamond. With millions and millions of tons of pressure. We dig it up and we see the essence of death. We shine it up and it becomes the most valuable thing on earth. People kill for it, steal for it, cheat for it, lie for it, enslave for it. Essence of death. It's pretty funny. Bling. The most valuable thing on earth is bling. How stupid can the human race become? It's all the more funny because it is death, the essence of death. So the Buddha would see a diamond and it's just a diamond. Why would you kill or cheat or lie or steal for something that doesn't cure you of diseases, doesn't make you hotter or cooler, doesn't make you smarter? Bling, 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 bling. Everybody wants them. Really, that's like kind of like monkey intelligence. Or crows. Crows love shiny things. You know. But we're not. We're humans. We're humans. We should be able to say, I know the value of this. The value is in, it's not relative. It's real value. What is the value of something? Is it to your benefit and the benefit of others? Does it increase virtue? Does it increase tranquility? Does it increase wisdom? That's valuable. If it doesn't, then the value goes down. This is just tiger balm. This just keeps me awake. It's great for you to rubbing on it. People wonder what I'm rubbing on myself. It's really tiger balm. Kind of useless, except you get mosquito bites and stuff. Good to keep you awake. Actually, let me advertise this. We're not selling it. Meditators who are brand new and can't keep their stupid breath on their dumb nose, and it sounds easy, doesn't it? Until you try it, maybe it'll last 10 seconds. Right? You follow your breathing in and out. Take a dab of tiger balm and put it under there. You'll pay attention to that spot for a long time. No, really. I did this as a novice in Thailand. Years and years and years and years ago. And sitting there and I'm meditating and my mind is going all over. So I took tiger balm and put it under there and I was like, whoa. Whoa, dude, I know where my breath is. And then you wean yourself from it. That's a good trick. It's a good trick. So concentration is not an end goal. Meditation is not an end goal. It's to clear your mind, to focus it so that you can see something for what it is in and of itself, and you look at it as a diamond, as essence of death, instead of, yeah, I'll kill for that. Then wisdom. The third part, wisdom. Wisdom is insight into something that cuts greed, hatred, and delusion. It isn't understanding greed, hate, delusion in an intellectual way. It's cutting it, removing it, abandoning it, destroying it. That's what wisdom does. I always use the same simile because it works. Well, I have two. There's one clown in the closet, kind of, it's fun, but you'll have to wait till next class. If you're in your house in the middle of the night, you picture this, right? And you hear a noise. Let's say you're all alone. It's 2 in the morning. You're woken up from sleep by a bang, by a noise. Nobody's supposed to be in your house. Hair stands on end. Adrenaline goes. Heart pumps. Maybe sweat. Fear. So you get up out of bed, and you hear the noise again. Strange noise. Sounds like somebody creeping around the house. So, am I being robbed? Somebody's in my house. Fear. Now, you can intellectually sit there and think, well, let's see, what the house is settling, or it's never going to get rid of the fear if you think about it. It will not go away. Doubt, fear, anger, any of those things, they will not go away by you thinking about it. Because it's not afraid of thinking. Because it's you. It's not going to go away. So you creep over. You open the door a little bit, flick on the light, it's a cat. What happens to fear? Gone. It's a cat. Ah! You may grab it and throw it out the window, or you may chase it around with a broom, but fear is gone. Why is it gone? Because direct experience and knowledge of that thing destroyed fear. If you had sat in your bed with the covers up and said, geez, I'd call the police, it'd never go away. Fear would never go away. The house is settling, maybe an animal, you know, like a raccoon got in the house, or maybe it's a person. It's hopeless. You just sit there afraid all night. So wisdom is direct experience and knowledge and insight that cuts greed, hatred, and delusion. Just gets rid of it. So you see something for the first time. You have an insight into body, for instance. Then something falls away that blocks wisdom. So, virtue, being a good person, doing good things, is making good karma. If your intention, by body, speech, and mind, you have mindfulness, you're watching your intentions, by body, speech, and mind, you do things that are to your benefit and the benefit of others, and you do not do things that are not. You just watch yourself. That's making good karma. Karma is intention. Intention is karma. An intentional act by body, speech, and mind has a result that is either happiness or not. That's all karma is. It's not tit for tat, but it's not intelligent. Karma isn't intelligent. Therefore, you can manipulate it. You can use it. Just as we go through life, every time we walk, we're using gravity, which is trying to make us fall down. That's why babies fall down all the time. Their legs are still in the duh state. We're falling forward, and we catch ourselves. We're using gravity to go. So you use your mind. We're being powered by all of this stuff that we don't understand. Once you understand the rules, you can use it. So let's say you get angry in the beginning, and you, instead of being angry at a person, you become angry at the anger. Turn it back on itself. Investigate it, take it apart. When you see what anger is in and of itself, it's just like looking at the cat. It goes. It can't exist without fuel. Go to a mirror if you get angry. I'm only using anger because it's common. Could be any of the other jealousy, greed, or hatred, or whatever. Go to a mirror and look at yourself and say, I'm angry. Boy, you're angry. You're really angry, and you look so ugly when you're angry, and you'll start laughing. The anger will just go away. You've removed the object. But we don't. We sit there, that bastard. Go on and on swearing at this person. I'm going to get my friends in on it. We're going to get this guy. No, this is crazy. This is crazy. It's worse than a disease. But it is a disease. That is a disease. Don't we want cure? Don't we want to be cured of this? So the Buddha says, here's the cure. It's all up here. Don't worry about body diseases. Don't worry about that stuff. If you got it up here, the body's not going to, you're not going to worry. The body will be all right. Mental disease. Sabesatamalang. We're all nuts. So the whole of Buddhism is, from the very first question we had, well, from the second question, it's about self. When, until you purify mind, then you get rid of self, because it's the last little clingy thing that we have. And you let go of self, and you're no longer a target. There's nobody there. Where does greed, hatred, and delusion go? What is it aimed at? Where does it come from? There's nobody home. Emptiness, right? So when the Buddha talks about sunyata, emptiness, he's talking about there's no self. The ultimate emptiness, the ultimate sunyata, is nobody home. What's the target? What's the keeper? Who's the keeper of stress? Who's the maker of stress? There's nobody there. So that's the goal. That's called enlightenment, when that disappears on the final horizon. Then the mind can be as big as the universe or as small as an atom, doesn't matter. It's not a thing anymore. It's not an object. It doesn't collect. It doesn't give, it doesn't take. The Buddha said, you know, well, after I'm... Where do you go? They asked the Buddha. Where are you going to go after you're dead? Nowhere. Well, are you going to be? Are you going to exist? No. Are you going to not exist? No. Are you both exist and not exist? No. Are you neither going to exist nor not exist? No. Because an enlightened mind, when the body is gone, everybody identifies an enlightened person with body, which is not the case. But when the body is gone, the person is dead. We didn't talk about the khandhas. That body-mind-personality pact dies. There's no going, there's no coming, there's no existing, there's no not existing, because it is not a state, and we can only think in states. So what is enlightenment? What is nibbana, or nirvana, as they say in America? What? I don't know. It can't be put into words, because everything we put into words is a state. What does not exist because of a state. It doesn't exist because it's not a state. And if something doesn't exist, it also is dependent upon non-existence or the absence of, but nirvana is neither. Any last questions?
Yes. I mean, isn't there a little glitch in this non-self thing? Like, you want, I mean, maybe you don't want this, but like if you don't get vaccinated, if you don't, watch your cholesterol, if you're around, like, smokers.
Who said not to do that?
I mean...
Who said not to take care of body? Where did you hear that?
Yeah.
Where did you hear that in Buddhism?
I
then you're just making up a silly question, aren't you? The Buddha says, take care of the body. We've got, monks have rules about medicine. What are one of the great four supports for monks? One of them is medicine. You don't punish body. This is, as I said, this isn't yoga. This isn't sleeping on thorns.
I mean, like,
you are responsible, and I've said this many times, as you are responsible for your car. You wash it, you clean it. And what have I said many, many times? If you don't, you'll stink. You'll fall apart. You'll get sick. The Buddha practiced self-torture for 6 years, and what was his conclusion? It was stupid. So I don't know where that question came up with. Maybe it's attachment to body. The Buddha says, be responsible. It's not the body's fault. Body's not evil. It's our attitude towards it. It's our view of it that is deluded and warped. You don't punish body, you take care of it. It will grow old, grow sick, and die. There's nothing you can do about it. But you don't have to hurry it along. I don't think your wife would like you not taking baths or not, right? You have to take care of body. It's just body, that's all. We're responsible. It's our car, it's our vehicle. It's part of that self to get to the other side. But when you abandon body, it doesn't mean stop taking care of it. It means mentally you have, okay, there's body. I'll take care of it. I'll do what's necessary. But when I grow old and grow sick and it's in pain or I'm dying, I'm not going to... So what? It was borrowed. No. The body is a responsibility to... Yeah. Just as much as mind is. You don't let go of mind because it's not yours. Because it doesn't know it's not yours. It's saying the opposite. I am you. I am special. I am divine. I am eternal. I am forever. It's lying. Body, mind also lies about body. It tells us all kinds of lies. Perfect example, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I will. Ha ha. Perfect example of body. How does everybody view body here? Hot, 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 or no? We're very simple beings. We're simple animals. Turns me on, doesn't turn me on. That's how we view people. We sort them out. Hot, whoa. Or, ooh, dog. It's primitive. We're primitive. We're made like that. Biologically, we're made like that. Our brains are wired like that. We're to reproduce, get a lot of kids and drop dead. All animals do the same thing. What are we looking at? What is hot? Hair is hot, skin is hot, fingernails, toenails, teeth, they're all hot. We can't see the rest of the body. Livers don't turn you on, at least I hope not. Intestines, livers, guts, insides, no, we don't even think about that. Or what body produces, snot, tears, feces, pee, pus, blood, sweat, earwax, spit. We like those things? No, that doesn't work. All comes from inside. Inside is not nice. All of the things that turns you guys hot, and girls too, is dead. They're all dead. Skin is dead, hair is dead, fingernails are dead, they're all dead. That's why you cut your hair, it doesn't say ouch. That's why you don't evaporate, you're covered with scales, dead scales. That's what all this dust is in our houses. That's us. Almost 100% skin. There are animals living in our carpet that live only on our dead skin. Carpet mites. We're dead. We like dead things. Great! Yeah, one for the team. Do we look at body like that? Do we ever realize? Did we ever think of that? No, I guarantee you never thought of that, did you? So remove the dead things from a human body. Take off the hair, pull out their fingernails, toenails, pull out their teeth, and remove their skin. Hot? What's left over? Is that hot? Does that turn you on? Unless you like Night of the Living Dead movies or bad B-zombie movies. Ugly, horrible, horror, nightmare. We just remove the dead things from body. What kind of weird, topsy-turvy world do we live in? Hey, great, French kissing. All right, have her spit in your soup and see if you want to eat that. Love her fingernails. What if you find a fingernail, toenail in your food? Beautiful hair. Put it in your food. Try it there. Repulsed. Ugly. What happened? A millisecond ago, we were sniffing it. Oh. What? All of a sudden, it's repulsive? Brain is weird, isn't it? Think about it. Think about it. You got to think about those things. You know what it does? It sobers you up. It looks at you, look at body in reality, and it calms down the hotness a little bit. Doesn't make you make bad decisions because of dead things on a body. People do kill, steal, cheat, lie for body. This is where prejudice comes from. Black, red, yellow, white. This is where that color thing comes from. It's just that dead layer. You skin us all, you aren't going to be able to tell what race you are. Equally ugly. How shallow our values are. Think about that. This is what meditation is for. This is what virtue is for. This is what wisdom is for. It's these insights into saying, wait a minute, I'm going to do these acts which are going to cause me and other people suffering for that? You'd expect that out of 10-year-old, 12-year-olds, 13, 14-year-olds. But when you get to adulthood, start thinking about those things. You're going to start understanding and being able to value as you go through life. I'm not going to waste energy, time, and goodness on something that really is not that valuable. If you go out and buy a car, you look at it, it's a wreck, and they say $30,000 for this 1950 Chevy, which would be an awful car. That's not worth that. What do we go through life buying that isn't worth that? I mean buying in our mind, buying in our emotions, buying in our time, buying and doing things not skillful, hurting ourselves and others. That's what we're spending. What are we getting? Pig in a poke. God, that's old, isn't it? Pig in a poke, does anybody know what that is? Well, I'm kind of old. Anyway, now you guys have lots to think about. You'll go back and you've earned your 1 hour torture with another temple or another religion. That's what you have to do, right? Is it you have to attend a service? Is that what they say? Yeah. Yours the same? You have to go some other religion and attend?
I'm in a Buddhism class to
write
a paper.
Oh, you're in a Buddhism class? Okay. What are you going to write a paper on? Oh, okay. All right, then that's... you got any more questions? We're open next Saturday. Oh, no, next Saturday is Thai New Year celebration here. So you don't have to be Buddhist to come to this. Thai food, there's going to be tossing water at you and... starts at 10:30. Ceremony start at 10:30. There's a Thai restaurant from New York that's coming to sell Thai food takeout, but there's also free food. That's fun. Huh?
Come long ways to sell food.
New York, yeah. Well, they're thinking of buying a Thai restaurant here, so they'll be coming this week, and then they're staying at Ning Nong. You know Ning Nong? They're staying at her house. She's got two houses. So they're staying at their empty house. They're her friends. And they're looking for a Thai restaurant, empty restaurant.
So Saturday there's no class?
No. We'll send out an email. Buddhist ceremonies are not... There's nothing sacred about Buddhism. We don't have... marriage is not a... We don't have any sacraments. So when people think, you know, geez, if I go into this place and I don't remove my shoes, will they, you know, chop me up or hang me? Or you can't really do anything. A Buddhist might come up and say, don't do it that way, do it this way. But there's don't worry about customs and, oh, I might offend somebody, or it's sacred, or, you know, that doesn't bother, it's all right. Yeah, that's considered extremely rude, yeah. But you're still alive.
No, I'm dead. Just an illusion.
I remember when Catholic women had to wear hats in the church. I was raised Catholic. It's long ago. But all girls, and if they didn't come in, they had to pin a napkin to their head. Or a Kleenex. And you better not be a woman without a headdress in the Catholic Church. So, yeah. I never understood why that. They never explained what the rule was for, but there was a lot of girls with napkins on their heads. Which we thought was kind of funny. And of course the boys could not wear a hat. Absolutely not. We had to take off our stupid hats. And all those rules have changed now. Okay, half hour break and meditation 7 to 8.